of John, chapter 2. We'll read verses 1 through 11, which is the account of Jesus turning the water into wine. We, of course, with all the miracles of Christ, we've preached upon many times. They're very instructive, much there for you and I to learn, and that would be helpful to us. Begin reading with verse 1. And the third day, there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee. The mother of Jesus was there. And Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. And when they wanted or lacked wine, the mother of Jesus, it's Mary, said unto him, They have no wine. Jesus said unto her, Woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. His mother saith unto the servants, Whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And there were set there 6 water pots of stone, after the manner of the purifying of the Jews, containing 2 or 3 firkins apiece. Jesus saith unto them, would be the servants, Fill the water pots with water. And they filled them up to the brim. And he saith unto them, Draw out now, and bear unto the governor of the feast. And they bear it. And the ruler of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine, and knew not whence it was. But the servants which drew the water knew. The governor of the feast called the bridegroom, and saith unto him, Every man at the beginning doth set forth good wine, and when men have well drunk, then that which is worse. But thou hast kept the good wine until now. This beginning of miracles did Jesus in Cana of Galilee, and manifested forth his glory, and his disciples believed more on him, or their faith was strengthened. Again, this John is the only one of the gospel writers who gives account of this incident. We see in verse 11, this beginning of miracles. So this is the first recorded miracle of Christ. Now, a miracle is, as far as the Bible is concerned, is a very obvious and manifest event. It is something, of course, that supersedes the laws that, the natural laws, the so-called laws of nature that God has established. The one thing about the laws of nature, you have to remember, is that God has established those laws. He's in control of those laws. And when he supersedes those laws, that is a miracle. But a miracle is not merely something unusual. A miracle is the intervention, divine power, the power of God interrupting the fixed laws of nature, an occurrence above nature, an occurrence, of course, that is above the ability of man. It's important to realize that a miracle is not an event without a cause. Of course, everything Jesus did, there was purpose, there was a cause. And all the miracles he performed was with a definite cause. We see also that all the miracles are acts of God's wisdom. They are always performed within the bounds or within the laws of God's being. In other words, God cannot deny himself. God's not going to do anything contrary to who he is. So all the miracles are in accordance with who he is. Really, the miracles are simply manifestations of the power of God. Now, the fact that this is the first recorded miracle of Christ makes it one of the most significant of his miracles. The actual miracle is clearly stated in verse 9. The water that was made wine. That's the miracle. Water was changed into wine. It does not say that the water was made to look like wine. It does not say that the water was made to taste like wine. It says the water that was made wine. Jesus made, it does not say that Jesus made more wine. It says the water was made wine. It does not say that Jesus made better wine, though he did. It is the water was made wine. In other words, he changed one element to another. It's not specified how he did this. We are simply told what he did. The water was made wine. Now, the miracles of Christ, of course, are meant to teach us very valuable lessons. They teach us lessons about our own needs. They teach us lessons about the sufficiency and the efficiency of Jesus Christ to meet those needs, whatever they might be. In this first miracle, most people get all snagged up on the issue surrounding the wine. And the issues, and this wine was real wine, was alcohol, oinos, and most people get all hung up on that issue and miss the lessons of the miracle and miss the joy of the message of the miracle. It's not our intention tonight to address the subject of Jesus making wine. Be sure of this. Jesus turned the water into wine. That you can be sure of. But we want to look at this miracle as a pattern. It is a pattern for all the other miracles that Jesus performed in the Gospels. So the subject tonight is the pattern miracle. Again, it is a pattern to the character of all the miracles that Jesus Christ would perform. The first thing we want to notice is the people that were present at this miracle, because it too sets forth a pattern. We read that the mother of Jesus was there in verse 1. But we see from verse 3 and 4 that it was not for Mary to decide what Jesus would do. Jesus rebuked her in verse 3, and when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus saith unto him, they have no wine. Now she was not just informing Jesus that they lacked wine. That is obvious from the reply that Christ gave. She was instructing Christ. She was telling Christ what to do. Mary, the mother of Jesus, but it was not for her, nor is it for anyone else, to decide what Jesus would do. In verse 4, Jesus said unto her, woman, what have I to do with thee. Mine hour is not yet come. Now, several places in the Gospels, Jesus speaks of his hour, and he's speaking of the crucifixion. That obviously is not the case here. He's speaking in the context of miracles. Mine hour is not yet come. I believe what he's referring to is mine hour to do a public miracle is not yet come. So to me, it's obvious that that was what Mary was instructing Jesus to do. But he did perform a miracle here. But it was more of a private miracle. We see in verse 9, when the ruler of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine and knew not whence it was, but his servants which drew the water knew. It seems like they were the only ones who did. So it wasn't his time to do a public miracle or a public manifestation. That's what Mary wanted him to do. That's obvious from, again, the response of Jesus. The lesson here is this. He would do things his own way and in his own time. This is always true. This is true of all the miracles of Jesus Christ. The Mary, the mother of Jesus, was there. But the miracle of Christ and all the miracles of Christ do not have their basis in who people are. That's not why he performed this miracle, because of Mary. All miracles are in spite of who we are. And we must never forget that. None of us are deserving of a miracle. Miracles are done in spite of who we are. In other words, miracles toward people are always acts of grace. They are always acts of mercy. So from the people that were there, Mary being there, we see a pattern beginning to develop. Also notice the instruction to the servants sets forth, again, a pattern. In verse 5, Mary gave instruction to the servants at the wedding. His mother saith unto the servants, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And then Jesus instructed them. In verse 7, Jesus saith unto them, the servants, the very servants that Mary said, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And then he, of course, told them what to do. What we have here is God is pleased to use human instrumentality. God does not have to use human instrumentality. God can use whatever he desires. We see this throughout, again, the miracles of Christ in the Gospels. But we see God is pleased to use human instrumentality. God can and will use instrumentality, but he's not limited. He's not limited to such. We must always remember that. So the instruction that was given was fill the water pots with water. That's something we can do. Man can fill jars with water, but only God can turn the water into something else. And that is true in so many aspects of our life. We can fill the jars with water, but only God can bring about a transformation. We can preach the gospel. We can tell lost sinners about Jesus Christ. We can tell lost sinners how that they can be saved. That we can do, that we should do, but only God can save them. Only God. So we must stay where God has put us. We must not try to cross those bounds. So man can fill the jars, but only God can turn the water into something else. We do ordinary, common tasks, but it is Christ, or it is God, the Holy Spirit, that turns those tasks into the extraordinary. Don't try to do the work of God. This is seen all through His miracles. God uses instrumentality. Man is told to do certain things, but only God can bring about the transformation. Thirdly, the occasion of the miracle sets forth a pattern. And the third day, there was a marriage. So it's a wedding. Weddings are the common experiences of life. Just a common occurrence, a wedding. It's a common experience. Jesus is concerned and Jesus is involved in the ordinary situations of life. A wedding is an ordinary situation. I am not saying they're not important. That's not what I'm saying. But it is an ordinary event. It is an ordinary circumstance. The thing that people need to realize about weddings is after the wedding comes the marriage. If people would remember that, we would be a lot better off. But people get all hung up in the wedding. But I'm getting off track here. But again, we see that Jesus is involved in the ordinary situations of life. You follow the miracles of Christ through the Gospels. And it's just the ordinary situations of life, and Christ shows up, and He steps in, He interrupts, and there's a miracle. And that's how the Lord works. That's how He works. Weddings symbolize an ushering in. And this first miracle that took place at a wedding is the declaration. It is the ushering in of the one who can do that, which is beyond the power of nature. Again, keep in mind, mine hour has not yet come. This is the ushering in of the public miracles. Fourthly, the place of the miracle sets forth a pattern. In verse 1, we see it was a marriage in Cana of Galilee. Why did the Lord record these things? Why do we need to know that it's a wedding? Why do we need to know where the wedding took place? Because He's teaching us something here. There is a pattern. The fact that it was a wedding, so the fact that it is mentioned, shows there's some importance. The fact that the place of the wedding is mentioned shows that there is some importance. If it didn't matter, the Lord would not have mentioned it. Don't ever say concerning something the Lord has mentioned that it does not matter. If the Lord mentioned it, it matters. If He didn't mention it, it doesn't matter. And that's where people get hung up also. The Lord doesn't mention something and they make that matter. The Lord mentions something and then that doesn't matter. People got it all backwards. But we see here the place. Cana of Galilee. A very obscure little town outside of Nazareth. Had absolutely no social significance in its day. Just an ordinary, common place. Just like Bethlehem of Judah. An ordinary, common place. The pattern that is being set forth here and the lesson that we need to learn is that Jesus not only steps into the ordinary experiences of life, Jesus steps into ordinary places. And when he does, he makes them better. You read the phrase in the book of Luke, and when Jesus came to the place, and what a difference that makes. Makes all the difference in the world. And we see this all through the miracles of Christ. Jesus showing up in just ordinary places. Nothing extraordinary about them whatsoever. And he works his miracle. We see, sixthly, the use of that which was used in ritual sets forth a pattern. Notice in verse 6, and there were set there 6 water pots of stone. Now, I believe we have a picture of salvation here also, but that's not my point tonight. But there were 6 water pots of stone. Why were they there? After the manner of the purifying of the Jews, containing 2 or 3 firkins apiece. These water pots were there for ceremonial cleansing, for ritual purity. They were there for religious purposes. And Christ transformed the contents of those ritual water pots, showing that it is not ritual that man needs. It is Christ. It's very important, these 6 water pots of stone, and it is specifically mentioned why they were there. Why didn't he just tell us there were 6 water pots of stone? Because again, there's a lesson here. After the manner of the purifying of the Jews, these were water pots that were used in, for lack of a better word, religious ritual. He and he alone can change religion and ritual into abundance. You see, the world, or religious people, the religious world, thinks that religion is so very important. It is only if it's real. Again, I don't know of anything in the Old Testament or the New Testament that is condemned more than religion, especially in the Old Testament. It's something that absolutely sickens God. And God, and the Lord takes these 6 water pots of stone that were used in ritual, and he changes them into abundance. This is what we need. This is what religion needs. A transformation brought about by Jesus Christ. If Jesus Christ does not bring a transformation religion, your religion is worthless. Absolutely worthless. Seventhly, the nature of the miracle sets forth a pattern. The miracle was a transformation. It was a transformation. Water made wine. You can't do that. You can't turn water into wine. You can't just pour water into a jug, a water pot, and it turn into wine. This is a miracle. It is a transformation. One element is changed into another element. So we have a transformation. To transform means to make over to a radically different form, to change, to transfigure. That's what Christ does. Christ transforms. He changes. He transfigures. We see this all through the miracles of Christ, specifically the healing miracles of Christ. Jesus Christ transforms. He transforms a crippled man into a man who can walk. He transforms a deaf man into a man who can hear. He transforms a blind man into a man who can see. His miracles are miracles of transformation. And this is what man needs. Man needs a transformation. He doesn't need a resolution. He needs a transformation. And that takes the miracle of God. And God can use whatever He pleases to bring about that transformation. In this case, He used water and 6 water pots of stone, and He used men to pour the water. Who would have thought? But again, God, it's His business to transform. He does not merely rearrange. That's what religion does. Rearranges. That's what we do by nature. We rearrange things to make it look better. God doesn't just rearrange things. He transforms things. We should not be satisfied with just a rearrangement. We need a transformation. And only the Lord can do that. Now, here he takes ordinary water. You know, some people have asked, well, what kind of water was it? It was water. If it was a different kind of water, I don't know what that would be, but if it was a different kind of water, he would have told us. He took ordinary water and he made it extraordinary. He took ordinary water and made it wine. How did he do it? Did he say, water turn to wine? There's no record of how he did it. All he did was tell the servants to pour the water into the water pots. And it was wine. Doesn't tell us how he did it. So what does that mean? It means we don't have to know how he did it. Why don't we have to know how he did it? Because it's not like we're going to repeat it. It's beyond our ability. All we need to know is he did it. Again, in the Gospels, he would heal one man by touching his eyes. He healed another man by putting mud in his eyes and spitting in his eyes. The Lord, and all of this just simply teaches us that the Lord is not limited to any one means. You see, because it's our way of thinking is, if the Lord did it this way this time, he must do it that way all the time. Well, no, that's not true at all. The Gospels bear that out. And we need to always remember that. God is in the transformation business. And only he can do that. God can take mean and ugly lives and turn them into beauty. God can do that. That's not in the power of man. Oh, we can make some arrangements and we can rearrange a few things, but only God can transform lives. God can take that which is filthy and transform it into that which is clean. He can take that which is rebellious and immediately transform it into obedience. God can do that. You can argue with somebody until you're blue in the face, and God is the one who takes rebellion and changes it into obedience. He can take that which is offensive and transform it into that which is acceptable in His sight. He can take a desert and make it a garden. He can put mountains or rivers in the top of mountains. God can do this. He can take that which is broken and transform it into that which is whole. He can take that which is wrecked and ruined and renew it and restore it and salvage it. He's in the transforming business. The Lord can transform houses into homes. And may I say, there is a huge difference between a house and a home. Don't say so-and-so lost their home. Well, that's a real tragedy. They lost their house. There's a big difference between a house and a home. And the Lord can transform a house into a home. And may I say, the Lord can transform weddings into marriages. These are miracles that the Lord performs. He can take desperate circumstances and turn them into wonderful situations, delightful situations. He can take a bitter attitude and turn it into joy. He can take something that is absolutely useless and transform it into a valued asset. And we learn that from this particular miracle. But notice again concerning the nature of this miracle. However Christ did it, it was done in ease. No problem. There was no difficulty whatsoever. And whatever the Lord does, He does with ease. The whole universe was spoken into being by a word. That's pretty easy. Everything He does with ease. But not only that, this miracle was free. It was free. There was no charge. It was free. We see also it was for God's glory. And it was for the strengthening of the faith of His own. The significance of this particular miracle, we see in verse 3, they wanted or they lacked wine. So it was a time of emptiness. It was a time of emptiness. We all experience times of emptiness. When they lacked wine, Mary said to Christ, "They have no wine." So the wine had run out. There was an emptiness. There was a void. And it occurred unexpectedly. Did the family expect to run out of wine? No, I don't think so. And many, many times you and I experience empty spots, and we do so unexpectedly. But notice that these empty spots, they can come in the physical realm. They can come in the emotional realm. They can come in the spiritual realm. They can come at unexpected times. Our pursuits, especially if you're pursuing the wrong thing, can become empty. Dreams, especially if you're dreaming about the wrong thing, and goals can become empty. Marriages, relationships can become empty. Feelings of love can become empty. Feelings of assurance and security can become empty. Prayer can become empty. Bible reading can become empty. Worship can become empty. And these things can become empty at unexpected times. Many times the Lord brings these empty spots into our lives to remind us that we need Him. to remind us that He is the one who can transform the empty spots into places of abundance. Now, no doubt, since there was a wedding, there was some planning. And they did not expect to run out of wine. But they did. But they did. The lesson there is you can do all the planning you want. You still, I guarantee you, you still, no matter how much you plan, there's going to be some empty spots. That's the way God has designed it, so that we depend upon Him. Now, the important lesson is what do we do in these times of emptiness? First thing we need to do is keep the Lord a priority in our life. In verse 2, it says, "And both Jesus was called and His disciples to the marriage." Jesus had been invited to the wedding. I would advise you, if you're going to get married, to invite Christ to the wedding. I would encourage you to, more importantly, to invite Christ into your marriage. The problem is most don't invite Christ to the wedding, and many of those who do, that's where they leave Him. But again, seek His presence. When they invited Christ to the wedding, what were they doing? They were seeking His presence. They were seeking His approval. They were seeking His blessing. And we must continue to do this. When we come across an empty spot and we can't figure, and we didn't expect this empty spot, and we can't figure out why this empty spot has occurred, seek His presence. Seek His blessing. Seek His guidance. Do this in every aspect, in every area of your life. He must be the priority. And even then, you will still have some empty spots. But He'll be there to fill the empty spots. Seek Him. The problem with most when they have empty spots is they seek empty wells. They search for the living amongst the dead. They go to the wrong places. And life becomes more and more and more empty and more void. So we're going to have empty spots. But the way to have empty spots filled is keep the Lord priority. Invite Him into every aspect of your life. Seek Him in every aspect of your life. And then when the emptiness occurs, go to Him first. Now, Mary went to Him first, but again, we've already been through that. They have no wine, but there's a lesson here. When we hit an empty spot, go to Him. Go to Him. You don't have to try and figure it out. Usually when you do that, you're going to find someone to blame, and guess what? At the end of the day, you're still going to be empty. Just go to Him. And go to Him and tell Him where it is that you're empty. This is what Mary did. They have no wine. Go straight, go immediately to the one who can meet the emptiness, to the one who can transform the emptiness into fullness. Go straight to the lover of your soul. We'll save a lot of time by doing this. And we'll save ourselves a lot of heartache. And then notice also, do what Jesus says. It does not make sense to go to the Lord in prayer, to seek the Lord, to go to God in prayer. God tells you what to do, and then you do just the opposite. That makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Do what He says. Mary went to Jesus. They have no wine. Jesus as we said, rebuked her, instructed her. And then in verse 5, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. It's not whatsoever he saith to someone else. You don't have to worry about that. Whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. You do it. Remember Peter, well, what about John? The Lord told Peter, what about John? Don't worry about John. Worry about Peter. And here it was, don't worry about what anybody else is doing. Whatever Christ tells you, you do it. Whether it makes sense or not, you do it. Whether you can see any reason behind it, you do it. Now notice, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. Jesus then told them, fill the water pots with water. Well, what in the world does that have to do with they have no wine? Absolutely nothing. And a lot of times when the Lord tells you and I to do something, it will appear that it has absolutely nothing to do with our situation, with our problem, with our lack, with our emptiness, but I guarantee you, if the Lord has told you to do it, it has something to do with your issue. And the sooner we learn that, the better off we will be. Fill the water pots with water. Lord, did you not hear us? They have water. They need wine. Doesn't have to make sense. We don't have to be able to figure it out. And what's wonderful here is, verse 7, and they filled them up to the brim. And they did so without questioning. They did so without hesitation. That's something we need to learn. We can question and hesitate and eventually get around to doing what the Lord told us to do. But in the meantime, we've missed some blessings. We need to do what He tells us without questioning, without any hesitation. And they filled them up to the brim. In verse 8, He gave them further instruction. This is important. He gave one piece of instruction. They obeyed, and then He gave the next piece of instruction. Our tendency is we want to know all five steps right up front. All you need to know is what you need to do right now. And once you do that, He'll tell you what to do next. But we try to figure it all out. Well, if I do this, then they might do this, or if I do this, then this might happen. On and on and on and on and on, and we go. Jesus said, fill the water pots with water. They filled them up to the brim. And verse 8, and He saith unto them, draw out now. Draw out now and bear or carry it unto the governor of the feast, and they bear it or carried it. Again, He gave them further instruction, and they obeyed. Each step of the way, obey His instruction. Again, this appears that it has absolutely nothing to do with they have no wine. Fill the water jars with water, and then draw out of the water jars and carry it to the governor. What does that have to do with they have no wine? As long as you keep the Lord a priority, as long as you go to Him with your need, and as long as you do what He says, there will always be something to draw. And that's what He's saying there in verse 8, draw out now. You do what the Lord says, when the Lord says it, in the Lord's time, and there will be, in your time of emptiness, there will be something for you to draw. Something that the Lord has transformed into extraordinary for you to draw. So, we need to keep that in mind. In closing, verse 11, this beginning of miracles did Jesus in Cana of Galilee. So that's twice now we've been told of Cana. And he manifested forth his glory, and his disciples believed on him. The disciples witnessed the miraculous transforming power of Christ. They witnessed the abundance that only Christ could bring about. They witnessed the sufficiency of Jesus Christ. They witnessed the difference that Jesus Christ could make. Now, if you witness enough times the transforming power of Christ, you witness enough times in your life the abundance that only He can bring about, and you witness enough times the sufficiency of Christ in your life, and you witness enough times the difference that Christ can make in your life. You witness that over and over and over and over again in your life. Guess what? Your faith will eventually be strengthened. That's how faith is strengthened. You can't just exercise faith once a month and have strong faith. That's why we're told to walk by faith. We're to live in the realm of faith. And as we do that, and as we observe the Lord supplying our needs, and we observe the Lord working miracles in our lives, our faith is strengthened. And any time faith is strengthened, that's always a good thing. That's never a bad thing. That's always a good thing. Because you know what happens? When faith is strengthened again, and his disciples believed on him, that is, they believed more on him. When faith is strengthened, you now have greater enjoyment of the Lord. There are a lot of people today, a lot of people who profess to be saved, and if they're enjoying the Lord, they're sure keeping a pretty good secret of it. It appears to me that they're pretty miserable most of the time. How do you enjoy the Lord? It takes faith. It takes experiencing the Lord. Not only is there more enjoyment of the Lord, there's greater peace. There's greater assurance. The more our faith is strengthened, the more peace we have. The more our faith is strengthened, the more assurance we have. How is faith strengthened? Again, it's strengthened by going to Him. Following His instruction, whether it makes sense or not. This is why when people are trying to make decisions and they list all the human reasons, you're going down a wrong path. Now, I understand why a lost person would do that, because that's the only thing they have. But if that's the basis of your decision, you're going down the wrong path, and you're going to make the wrong decision most of the time. Because that's not how God works. We ought to know that from the Old Testament. We know it from the children of Israel. We know it all through the Old Testament. We see it all through the New Testament. Look to God. And it does not have to make sense. Just look to the Lord and keep looking to the Lord, and that will and God will show up. God will intervene. God will work miracles. You will stand amazed, and your faith will be strengthened. You'll be happier. You'll have more peace. You'll have more assurance. Everything will be better. This is how we're to live. And there's so many lessons. And again, there's also a picture here in this miracle of salvation, but we're not going to look at that. Brother Tim, if you'd come and lead us in a verse of song.